It is Tuesday, May 24th, 2005. This is the House Special Committee on Budget, Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety, and we are continuing our work session on House Bill 5129, which relates to the Department of Justice. And we appreciate receiving the information on comparables on caseloads. I was wondering if we could begin by having Mr. Neely come forward and discuss with us that information as far as Oregon's workload, caseload comparison to other states.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chair Richardson. For the record, my name is Kevin Neely. I'm the Executive Assistant to Attorney General Hardy Myers at the Department of Justice. Yesterday afternoon, I distributed to each of you a memorandum that takes a look at the backlog of cases both in our trial division and in our appellate division. Unfortunately, we weren't able to find West Coast comparators in each of these areas. I can tell you that we're already scrambling to try to work with the Public Defense Services as to what their backlog is. As I indicated in this memo, that's in large part an apples-to-apples comparison. Most of the cases that we have in our criminal appeals units, the two units in defense of criminal convictions, most of those cases have corollary public defenders on the other side. Not all, but most of them. That information may be available even as we work through the remainder of our budget. The only area we were able to find direct comparisons with some of our peer states is in our federal habeas corpus work. That work is done by our trial division component of defense of criminal convictions. And I think, as you can see on the second page of this memo, in Oregon, in 2004, based on a survey of five states, our backlog per attorney or caseload per attorney, 84 cases per attorney. The next closest is Nevada at 52 cases. We have, again, no data going back beyond 2004. We just collected this in the course of developing our budget and in the course of working over the interim.
Did you have other states that are not listed on this graph that had an excess of 84?
Unfortunately, Chair Richardson, these are the only states that we contacted, as far as I know. This is all of the data that we have. I can go back and check, but I think I would have included all of the data, our folks in trial division.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions about this memo again. I think the one comparator we have does show that Oregon is, in fact, carrying a fairly significant load compared to some of our other western states.
Any questions on it?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to, I guess what struck me was on the page two, the paragraph at the end talking about mean substantial additional delays and increased backlogs. Delays overall caused them to probably not be able to prosecute the offender after a point. And is that just because they're gone, or what happens?
That's a very good question, Representative Boone, and I appreciate it. Chair Richardson, Representative Boone, the answer to that question is, as cases move along in the system, in some instances it can take literally decades to move, for example, a capital case through the system. I think Representative Hansen alluded to that yesterday. And if at any point we've worked through the system and a case is reversed, particularly in post-conviction or federal habeas, that case then goes back to the original prosecuting attorney in the county in which it was originally prosecuted for a potential retrial. And as you can imagine, 20 years down the line, it may be that the district attorney can't find any witnesses. It may be that the witnesses' recollection of the episodes that are pertinent to that prosecution have long faded. It may be that evidence has been lost or destroyed. And so I think as soon as you get beyond even maybe 10 years, the challenge that we hear from district attorneys across the board is significantly increased when it comes to re-prosecuting those offenders. So, again, that's why in terms of post-conviction and federal habeas, it is beneficial to move through the process relatively quickly in case the worst should happen. Now, I would add 90% or more than 95% of the time the Department of Justice prevails in these cases. But again, you don't ever want to see that one ugly case that goes back and the prosecutor is not able then, because of stale evidence, to prosecute.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the backlog on federal habeas corpus cases, do you have some kind of a guess on, obviously some are capital cases, but a lot aren't, but they have to exhaust all their state appeals before they get to the federal point. How old would you guess those cases are on an average before they get into the federal courts?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, a good example is a case that the Attorney General tried in front of the U.S. Supreme Court last year, and I think that case was, how old was that case? Are you maybe 6 or 7 years old? Probably a decade old. And so that's one of the few cases that has gone entirely through the system. And again, that's not a capital case. That was just a non-capital prosecution. 10 years before that case ultimately reaches the United States Supreme Court. Fortunately, the Attorney General prevailed in that. The District Attorney doesn't need to go back and prosecute that. But again, I think that's an example, and that's a relatively speedy example of a case that would work its way through the system. In a capital case, clearly, we're just about to have our second case that enters the federal habeas system, and that case, I think, has been in the system for about 18 years.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Neely, just a quick question. What is the universe, or how many federal habeas corpus cases do you have in this measurement? I know there's only like one or two capital cases in the system.
Sure.
How many do you think there are of other cases?
Chair Richardson, Mr. Wilson, I don't have an answer to that. I can tell you that, just based on our backlog, I'm sure there are hundreds of cases that are out there. It's not 10, 20, 30 cases, it's hundreds. But I don't have that number off the top of my head. I apologize.
Just kind of push a little bit further on this graph. It says per attorney compared to other Western states. Is that attorneys or attorney that are assigned to these federal habeas corpus, or is this based on the total number of attorneys in your office?
Mr. Chair,
I mean, if one state has two attorneys,
I absolutely understand.
Cases, they have 50, and if we have one, and we have 84 cases, we have 84.
Right. So. I understand your question perfectly, and the answer to that is, for the purposes of this graph, it is attorneys who are working on federal habeas cases. It's my understanding that the federal habeas caseload is handled similarly in most departments of justice or attorneys general offices, and again, this represents the 9 attorneys we have that are working on federal habeas caseload.
Very bad.
So the bottom line is, I think this is an apples to apples comparison, and I think at the end of the day, it's only the attorneys who are working, not department-wide analysis.
Okay,
Representative
Booth. I just have kind of I'm not an attorney, and I'm not sure what habeas corpus means. And my Latin is non-existent. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, I'm not an attorney either. But I can tell you that habeas corpus are essentially cases in which the defendant is arguing that they are being improperly detained.
Okay.
And so they're generally handled in the federal court system.
Okay.
And in those cases, again, they are, as Representative Hansen indicated, they're kind of the last step. By the time they get to federal habeas corpus, they've generally gone through an entire direct appeal, an entire state post-conviction appeal, in which they might argue that they are that they had, for example, ineffective assistance of counsel, so non-fact-related arguments in the state court, and then after that they go into the federal system.
It loosely means to produce the body.
Well, that's what I thought. The corpus is the body, but the habeas got me.
England, and the idea that the king could put a prisoner in prison and just leave him there. And this would force the opportunity to bring the person forward to determine whether or not he's properly being held.
Okay, just thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my concern is that we want to get these cases resolved and resolved at the lowest appeal level, because I don't want to have to see the Attorney General have to fly back to Washington and argue a lot of cases before the Supreme Court, that this seems like a lot of wear and tear and a lot of extra expense, then we need him here in Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, duly noted. Obviously, in all honesty, moving these cases through the system quickly does, in fact, save the state money. Every time we have to file an extension, every time we have to go to the court to work with the public defender, you can see not only is it affect our office's budget, it affects the public defender's budget, it affects the court's budget. So, again, I think we've talked about that tapestry before.
Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and proceed.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Mr. Neely's at the table, and of course he's left now, but there was another memo just to bring to your attention underneath your agenda dealing with the questions on Medicaid fraud revenues and settlements, and that's there if you have any questions. I'm sure if you get a chance to read it here as we work through the rest of the budget, they're available to any questions. That was one of the questions you asked yesterday. Mr. Chair, I think we have gone through the complete portion of defense of criminal convictions and just need a motion to move forward on that, on this particular part of the budget.
Okay. Chair would entertain a motion on these packages.
Mm-hmm. Okay, welcome. Mr. Chair, I won't be able to support package 1118 in relationship to this division, so I'm reluctant to make the motion. You might not like my motion.
That's fine. Which package are we referring to? You're talking about 811?
Yeah, 811.
Oh, where are you going to be? Representing Boone?
Has there been any change in that? That's the thing. I'm concerned about that.
Well,
I thought we might want to
discuss before a motion is made, basically where things are at. The Senate has not included the 3%. In this area. The House has included it. There are a couple of agencies where it's going to be an important issue. This is one of them. Department of Corrections is one where pharmaceuticals and medical care and all those things are such a huge issue. And so it's going to be a matter that is going to have to be resolved between the House and the Senate before it gets, before it comes out as a final bill. What we're trying to accomplish here is maybe to move it into the full committee, and it comes down to whether you can support that or not. And if not, then we'll recess until Representative Wisnant returns. And if you can, then we can proceed. So just
it's just a matter of time in that sense. But were you able to have a discussion with the co-chairs on that?
I was not.
You were not. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd suggest we just move on to the child support division and come back to this when after Representative Wisnant joins us. I don't want to needlessly delay the process,
but I don't
see any reason to go on record supporting something or creating a situation where we're not really comfortable with our decisions when we can make progress in other manners.
That's fine. That's a good suggestion. Let's leave this one in abeyance and go forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, then the final division or budget unit within the Department of Justice to discuss is the Child Support Division. This division is responsible for collecting child support on behalf of those children that where support orders have been entered. It includes both public assistance and non-public assistance caseloads. The district attorneys have a role in the non-public assistance cases, and for some counties, and they're listed in the memo on page 7 and 8, the DAs have chosen not to participate in the program to the fullest extent, and the department picks up their responsibilities. Going back to the worksheet, this is really the largest division in terms of personnel for the department, and at one time I don't think there was actually a lawyer in this division. I don't know if there is right now. It's sort of a unique portion of the Attorney General's Department of Justice. Going back to the worksheet, the package on 090 just reflects the Smart Buy program savings of $66,000 general fund. I'm on page 28 of 32. The governor, I believe, had considered taking a 10% cut here, but when it looked at the loss of federal funds and the impact on the program and also potential penalties from the federal government for not meeting the standards, he chose not to take the 10% cut. So you don't see that as you do in other portions of this budget where there are 090 packages. Package 104 This is the position to transfer to the administrative or admin unit for financing of the chief information officer, which is the head information management person. We make a slight change here. Had a little trouble adding $2 and $4 to the budget. So LFO thinks that the Department of Justice could possibly survive without the $6 in this package, but it is a transfer of positions. Package 106 is the package you see in almost every division, just lining up the cost and the allocation of cost between for the central services budget, accounting, personnel, and information management. Package 161 is a continuation of a grant, a parental access and visitation grant. What we are suggesting here as part of our recommendation, of course, is to accept this grant. This is a grant the department anticipates receiving every biennium. It's an ongoing federal government grant, and we suggest that they do not need to put this in a policy package in the future just to make it part of the base budget unless the purpose of that grant or the use of the grant funds changes significantly. These are for projects that increase the non-custodial parents' access to the kids where appropriate. Package 163 is a pilot project. The Multnomah County Court is proposing to use match federal funds and child support with their own funds. The agency here acts as a pass-through agency, only enabling the Multnomah courts to access the federal funds. And for that reason, that we are approving those funds. It's not an increased cost to the state in any way. It's using existing funds in the Multnomah County Court. They would use these funds. I'm trying to think how. What were the uses? Family facilitation services, bringing families together wherever possible. Package 165 is a change between non-limited and limited. These are the payments that go out to the district attorneys, either as the incentive payments or as the federal match dollars that go back to the DAs, to the counties, for which county funds were used as the state share of that match. And the department would like to change that to non-limited just because it is often the case that a county may increase the amount they're using to increase their federal funds as a match, and we would like to do this so they don't have to keep coming back to the e-board if there are significant increases in those amounts. Again, the state is acting as a pass-through agency for these non-limited or these proposed non-limited funds. Package 801 is the usual LFO adjustments for the PERS rate and the AG rate. In this case, it's a little over a $500,000 reduction, which are both captured in the Senate and the House co-chair budget plans. Package 811 is a cleanup package. When the base budget was developed, there were a transfer, I believe it was 23 positions from this division, Information Management Division, the Admin Services Division, and this picks up two positions that were inadvertently left out of that transfer. This is the transfer and the consolidation of all the information management positions, network management, and those kinds of things into one unit within the department instead of having two separate units. Package 812 is a package that we are recommending. The department has worked with us. Usually at this stage of the budget, LFO asks the department to take a look at their revenues again and reforecast them because they were used, in some cases, the estimates were a year old in developing since the time they were developing the governor's budget. And during that time, they found that they had about $2 million more revenues than they thought. These revenues generally can be used to offset the general fund. What LFO is recommending is that there be a fund shift between general fund and other funds of $526,000, which frees up that amount of general fund, and the remaining new funds be set aside or used specifically for some issues that are there, which I think they presented to the subcommittee, the joint subcommittee, when they were in front during phase one and phase two. Those issues included a finding that they could not use federal funds for those cases where there was only a spouse involved and no children. Am I right on that? I'm trying to think if I phrase that right. Second of all was where they are still settling. There's a number of non-sufficient fund checks or non-collectible accounts. This would cover those accounts. And third is a looming issue out there, which is one that deals with the federal audit that is in the final phases of being completed, where Department of Justice and OYA were audited by the child support folks and were found to have used federal funds for cases that aren't eligible for federal fund use for collections. I believe this is an issue that goes beyond Oregon. These are similar findings that were found in other states across the country. There is a potential settlement out there of a significant amount, and we are suggesting that you take $420,000 of the funds that were identified as revenue, set them aside and request DASH to unschedule those until the amount of the settlement is determined and those funds can be used to partially fill that settlement. So this is a relatively complex package. On the bottom line, it frees up $526,000 of general fund for your use somewhere else in the public safety arena. And then measure our package 813 is the 3% reduction.
Before you go further, what is meant by incentive packages? How are these incentives used?
The incentive payments are payments if they meet certain guidelines or standards, meaning Department of Justice.
If the Department of Justice meets certain guidelines.
There are payments from the federal government. It's part of the child supports system or federal system that then are paid if they meet certain performance measures that are standard across the country.
Okay.
And again, those you never know if you're going to meet those standards, so standard performance measures, so you try to forecast your incentive payments, and sometimes your forecasts, you know, aren't there. They're probably relatively conservative, and then when they do come in, they are available. And package 813 is just a 3% reduction, as I stated before. So those are our recommendations, Mr. Chair. Anything else in the memo here?
Discussion on the recommendations, Representative.
Well, I just have a question on some of these other funds from the shift and stuff like that. Is it possible to take something there and put it into that 3% that we're talking about in this? In the defense of criminal convictions area of the budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, it would be possible. What I think I would urge you to do is to maybe put those aside for the time being. You are going to see a couple more large budgets come through this agency, mm-hmm. one of which has some significant unfunded problems in it, which is the state police and things like identification services, which are the criminal background checks. And it would seem to me our recommendation would be take a look at all of those things and sort of prioritize as you are able to free up funds and to put back. There's always a chance later in session to put money back into budgets, either in as they go through a conference committee process or with an end of session bill.
Is there any way to know how, and do they have to be from the same budget area, department, agency?
Not necessarily, okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Boone. These have not been, most of the savings at this point have been captured, for lack of a better term, by the co-chairs as part of the co-chair budget process. These have not been, this $526,000 mm-hmm. has not been captured at this point because it was found after the co-chair's budgets were developed.
one little bird from Mr. Wilson, too. Then if it's not captured as yet, can we flag it for something that get first dibs on it, basically? give me a break. This is new to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, right now, it's, I would say, for lack of a better term, it's under control of the subcommittee, unless I'm told differently by the co-chair. But again, I caution you not to suspend it quick, mm-hmm. because you haven't seen all the other issues out there. I'm sure the Department of Justice would love to have it reinvested, either in defense of criminal convictions or the consumer protection area, which was another significant issue for this agency. But I warn you, there are other significant issues still coming.
I guess my point was just saying, if it's still under the control under this subcommittee, that we could keep it right here for now.
Yes, Jeff.
Good.
Instead of in the big picture of things.
Never mind. Other questions? Okay, is there anything further that we need to do before we take a motion on the two packages, or the two clusters, and then a final vote? I mean, are we prepared after we do that?
We are, sir. Mr. Chair, we still need to talk about the performance measures also.
Okay. All right. Representative Hanna, we would entertain a motion on the two clusters, first one being the criminal defense of criminal convictions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that this committee accept the recommendations to the committee from LFO, including those changes in the area of defense of criminal convictions, including packages 090, 801, excuse me, and 811.
Okay. Representative Hanna has made a motion that we accept the LFO recommendations on the DOJ's budget portion relating to defense of criminal convictions, relating to the three packages that he's enumerated. Is there discussion on that motion? Representative Henson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll be voting against the motion, particularly package 811, which I don't think is applicable to this, this arena. I don't like package 090 much either, but that's not quite as vehement against that. Defense of criminal convictions is a core government service. It's a vital arena of public defense. It's an integral chunk of the whole public safety network, and cutting it beyond what we were doing even last biennium, and I think last biennium the budgetary forces were intense to reduce everything as possible. There's just simply no excuse for a budget cut in this arena at this point in this time, and I know there's a potential that we're early in the process, and there's an opportunity to change things later. But I think one of the ways that you get things changed later is if you highlight where some of the problems are and speak against them.
Okay, thank you. Other discussion? Representative Boone.
And I have to second that. And they've certainly made their case to me. And I think I'm thinking in terms that it was just a addition to my original thought process that we're looking at the big picture, and we have to be able to address what's coming down the line and rapidly without burning out all our resources. And so I will also be a no on it for that sort of a protest vote, but I hope that we'll be working to adjust it in the Senate and maybe in the end part, but I would definitely like to see somehow some extra money go into that so they can carry on and deal with what they're going to have to deal with in the future, too.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll do a formal vote on the final bill, but on this cluster, we've noted that there are objections to the vote by Hanson and Boone. Is there any other objection? Seeing none, then this recommendation for defense of criminal convictions carries. And Representative Hanna.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to the committee that the recommended changes to the committee by LFO to the governor's recommended budget as it applies to Department of Justice, Child Support Division, including package 090, 104, 106, 161, 163, 165, 801, 811, 812, and 813.
President Hanna moves that we accept the LFO recommendations relating to the DOJ budget cluster relating to defense of criminal convictions. Child support with the packages that he's enumerated. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection? Hearing none, those recommendations are approved.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, then on the bottom of page 8 on the memo are the appropriations to the bill. Everything is in a single line item for each of the fund types for this budget, and they're enumerated there in terms of what you delete and what you amend. What you're actually, this is a conceptual amendment, actually, since we're putting it into a brand new bill and not using the old joint bill, you'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have the amendment for full committee for you. But these will line up the dollar figures with what actions you've taken so far.
Is this the new bill number?
The new bill number is 5044. Or, no, excuse me, the 5129.
5129 is the new number.
Yes, yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. And then we'll do the performance measure separately, right?
Yes.
All right, so we need a conceptual amendment to amend the text of 5004 and to 5129.
Yes,
following
with
changes.
The changes.
You want to say the number again? 5044.
The conceptual amendment is to 5129 is the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
President Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that the amendments to House Bill 5044 be moved into House Bill 5129 as amended.
That will do it, I think.
Okay. It is proposed that we amend the text of House Bill 5044 as amended into House Bill 5129 with the changes that have been indicated by LFO. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. So move.
And then are we going to move 5129?
Yeah, performance measure. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I think in the back of your package will be a performance measure page. If you don't have one, I have some extra copies here. And we'll quickly go through those. They're on both sides, or it's a two-page table.
I'd like you to take a moment, if you would, and look these over, and if there's specific questions that you have, to bring them up, and then we'll vote on them as a group.
And the changes, if you're able to notice or differentiate, are in bold. And there are two new measures on the second page, at the or in the middle of the second page.
Questions on the proposed changes and additions of performance measures for Department of Justice? Not, would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we accept the performance measure amendments for the Department of Justice. They all appear very good. I'm really impressed to see that Goal 3, where we're going to provide 100% safety net for adult victims leaving domestic violence shelters. Honorable goal.
Representative Wisnant moves the acceptance of the proposed changes and additions to performance measures for Department of Justice. Is there discussion on this performance measures? Representative Hannah Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll support the measure, but just for the department's sake and for LFO's sake, the information we received on the backlogs yesterday, I think those might make in the future a valuable benchmark.
So noted. Other discussion? If not, is there objection to the motion to accept the proposed performance measures? Hearing none, accepted. And we're now ready for a final subcommittee action.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hannah.
I would move that House Bill 5129 as amended to the full House Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hannah has moved that House Bill 5129 as amended be moved to the full House Special Budget Committee with due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be opposing the motion, and I won't beat the same dog over and over, but the 3% cut to that we just talked about, and I'm very unhappy with the cuts for consumer protection. I think it's not just the dollars, but it's the destabilization, and that's a valuable program. We're still going to be able to continue with it at some level, but But I think there should have been a better strategy in terms of how we're going to even out the financing on it. And I think both of those areas are things that need to be highlighted for ongoing discussion and hopefully improvement. But for now, I think the appropriate vote for me with my views is would be a no.
So noted. Further discussion?
And I'll add my name to that, but I'm most concerned about the backlog of the criminal convictions and the time frames and the additional burden that they place on the local district attorney's offices when they have to come back. But I want to say, Mr. Chair, respectfully agree that we can come together and work with this in the future and with the Senate and in the end. Well, thank you.
Thank you. For the discussion?
Representative Bone?
No.
Representative Hannah?
Yes.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Wisnett?
Yes.
Chair Richardson?
Yes.
House Bill 5129 has been moved to the full House Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion for this committee today? Hearing none, we're adjourned.
Understand the